our voices in Portland, Black voices in particular, we're already a small community. We're already often, you know, overrun by other voices. And we have, you know, these kind of props that stand up and say they represent all of us. And we know that's not true. And so having someone coming in to take over the political strategy of an organization that they have shown a history of not aligning their values with was really troubling.
This is the Bris Poinsett Show. This is the Bris Poinsett Show. For the world's most dangerous infomercial, I'm your host, Bris Poinsett. Along with my producer, Ada, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio of the Portland Art Museum. This is the best of the Bris Poinsett Show, the world's most dangerous infomercial. I'm your host, Bris Poinsett, and along with my producer, Ada, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio at the Portland Art Museum. You can catch the full show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM 96.7. You can also catch clips on youtube.com/Bris Poinsett, plus exclusive bonus content on patreon.com/Bris Poinsett. Make sure to follow us on twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM, that's Numbers with a Z, or the Numbers Podcast Network on the Numbers podcast.com. Again, that's Numbers with a Z, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's show features my interview with Shayna Pomerantz, Candace Avalos, and Max Smith on the new and controversial direction of the Portland NAACP. Specifically, many people are wondering, is the new administration getting a little too cozy with Portland police? So all these people have been members past leadership in the organization very recently, and they have some concerns. We sat down to talk about it. Check it out. Help support this channel and get early access to videos plus exclusive content and patrons-only live discussions by becoming a member at patreon.com/Bris Poinsett. This is the Bris Poinsett Show, the world's most dangerous infomercial. And as you can see, we're still out of studio getting ready to come back strong for season two. But there's a lot happening in the city and a lot happening with one of the city's and, you know, one of the country's oldest and respected civil rights organizations. In this case, we're talking about some recent headlines with the Portland NAACP. And we want to talk with some concerned community members, community leaders, NAACP members who, you know, have some thoughts on the recent direction of it. So we've got Shayna Pomerantz, who is the executive director of Race Talks, Candace Avalos, the executive director of Verde, and Max Smith, owner of We Out Here magazine. And we're going to bring them in and try and get people caught up on what's going on. So hey. good morning, everyone. How are we doing today?
Excellent.
Yeah. Morning.
Morning. So, yeah, I wanted to bring you all in just because I've been seeing some recent headlines with the Portland NAACP. I know, Mac, you were part of the administration or the previous administration. And, yeah, I was just trying to get things together. I heard some rumors of some Johnny come lately, some scuttlebutt who have some issues with what's going on. So I figured, why don't we hear from what does the scuttlebutt have to say? So for those who don't know, this is from a recent meeting where Dean Mazursky was not appointed as the political action chair of the committee, and there was some tension around that. But yeah, there's been some recent, I guess, I'll just say from the outside looking in, I know it's like the previous administration under Sharon Gary Smith, there was like a decided stance specifically around Portland Police Bureau and one, not increasing funding, but then also not really, I don't know, what's the word I'd look for? Just palling up with the police that seems to kind of be going in a different direction. There was a recent vigil with the NAACP and Portland Police Bureau, which is kind of it was an interesting crossover choice. Yeah, I just, yeah, actually, Matt, can you Can you respond to that? Just because your face was great there.
I just can't imagine a world in which the NAACP is marching with the police against police violence. So I've seen it now. I've seen that world. It's an interesting world. It's led by interesting people. But yeah, that was definitely something to not attend for sure.
Yeah. So I'm curious, as far as, like, again, we talked about the past administration kind of like taking more of a stance, you know, I wouldn't even say like a hard stance against the PPP, just again, not increasing funding. But can you just talk about, like, and all y'all can also jump in, as far as like the reception towards that? Because it seemed, at least again, from the outside looking in, like that was moving in a positive direction. You had support. So how did we get here?
Well, you know, I think that when Sharon and Donovan and Tamia, you know, stepped in to those leadership roles in the NAACP, there was definitely a momentum to, you know, like diversify the ranks, make it more amenable to Black people, make it more helpful to our community, and not just make it a stamp for government projects and, you know, moneyed interests, like a lot of these small committees are. I think that for a long time, the city and the mayors, Wheeler and Adams and Hales, have enjoyed the privilege of just going to the local NAACP and saying, hey, we need, you know, this police initiative. And we think that, you know, it needs to have a Black lens on it. And they would just go, okay, you know, and then the cops just went and did whatever they wanted. And they had the stamp of the Black community. So when Sharon and Donovan and Tamia really led that to takeover, the big, you know, momentum behind it was really to disassociate from those situations, not to be a part of cohorts that always go along with, you know, the wrong thing, to take a stance for the environment, for our children, for education, for things like that. And to a lot of people who really are just interested in business connections, that work looked slow. And so with any time that you have, you know, a change in culture, there's always a kind of a blowback. And so that change in presidency, I think, really made a difference in what we're seeing now. So now we're seeing, you know, blatant attempts to pal up with the police, to, you know, stand next to Ted Wheeler, to hang out with, you know, Matt Hennessy and people like that, and really fit more into a politically neutral or conservative, you know, band.
Yeah, and mentioned Mayor Wheeler. I thought it was very interesting. You know, I was, for another project, I was interviewing Sharon at the office, like in, you know, maybe like the last couple weeks. And then, you know, I look and I see this, I see this press conference with James Posey and Ted Wheeler. I'm like, why is that? I was just there. Why is Ted Wheeler speaking right in front of the NAACP office? That's interesting. But
it's valuable.
Yeah. That was also particularly interesting. Again, we're coming off a time, or we're coming into a time where, you know, charter reform just passed. There's, when we talk about sort of what you alluded to, Mac, as far as the political implications of these relationships. And I want to specifically bring Candace in on this because, you know, there's a bunch of city council seats opening up. And I'm curious, as far as, like, when you think about, like, what this means in terms of what Portland could be or what's in store for the city coming up, because, you know, I think most people see there are opportunities here, but it feels like people are kind of like lining up to basically turn this into, you know, business as usual, except larger.
Yeah, well, you know, the vision behind what the Charter Commission put forth to the voters that passed with 56% of the vote was to completely change who has access to City Hall, not only in how they vote, but also in who they vote for. And so that is, you know, the goal of this transformation is that there will be more voices that sign up to run and to represent different parts of the city that have often been neglected, not only in terms of their voice, but also in terms of infrastructure and dollars going their way to ensure their communities are well-resourced. And so I think now where that change in political strategy, it's going to start to show itself in the coming years. And yes, it's an opportunity to bring in new voices. But as always, we must stay vigilant on the fact that there are going to be people who don't want to give away their power, are going to do everything they can to maintain it. So just because we made this change doesn't mean it's guaranteed that the council is going to be, you know, diverse and just representative of the community. So I think it's important that now people start thinking about, you know, setting themselves up for a run, what that's going to mean in this new form of government. Obviously, how services get delivered and bureaus are managed, is that's one of the big changes, where that's going to be under the mayor's supervision, which does give the mayor more power. But we were very intentional in creating the how the separations of powers between the mayor and the council, that the council still had a lot of budgetary power and influence over, you know, the policy decisions the city makes. So, yeah, we're all going to have to learn together how that's going to really shake out. But we certainly can't keep our eyes off of it, because, again, power does not just slowly leave the hands of people who always have it. It has to be taken. And that's why this whole situation with the NAACP was so important, because our voices in Portland, Black voices in particular, we're already a small community. We're already often, you know, overrun by other voices. And we have, you know, these kind of props that stand up and say they represent all of us. And we know that's not true. And so having someone coming in to take over the political strategy of an organization that they have shown a history of not aligning their values with was really troubling. And while, yes, we should celebrate that that was stopped, that is one of many attempts that we are definitely going to be seeing in the next couple of years to shift power back to the white majority, because we've, as we know, you know, Black lives don't matter forever. They matter for photo ops. They matter for small amounts of time that are politically advantageous. And that time has run out. So we have to really keep our, you know, keep on it.
Yeah. And, you know, just following you all kind of talking about this on social media, I think another point you made was just like, this is an opportunity, especially for Black women in the NAACP right now, to kind of reassume power. I was wondering if you all could just kind of expand on that a little bit, as far as like opportunities now with, you know, you have a new president, but in terms of, I guess, kind of like shifting some of that administrative power back, like what, like people who are interested in getting involved, people who are, you know, just kind of like looking at it as far as other members or people, you know, because you're all also involved in your other respective organizations. And like, yeah, what's happening now as far as like mobilizing around that, and start with Shayna or anyone who would like to, you know, comment on it.
Well, admittedly, I talked to Dr. Rosa and found out my NAACP membership has lapsed. So technically, I'm not a member. And I bring that up just because I think that was a big point that came up in the meeting with the nominations. You know, there was this point of, well, you're not a member. If you're not a member, then you really don't have any business here. And I think the part that, for me personally, how I come into this story, Candace and I were, Candace was the chair of the Citizens Review Committee, and she was the chair when I came on board, I want to say 2019, it was early 2020, actually. So we've actually never met in person while we were on the CRC together. Normally, it's a very elaborate kind of dais that folks sit at. We always did it over Zoom because we were in the pandemic. And Vadim Mazursky was the co-chair, vice chair when I came on. And so, you know, whenever I step into spaces, especially where there's other women, Black women specifically in leadership, I always like to kind of fill it out, but also try to figure out, you know, how can I support this woman? You know, what's the dynamic? And so we're in the middle of a pandemic. I did not start off with a good note with the CRC because they wanted us to come in February. And there was a white supremacist rally outside of City Hall. And I said, and MAGA rallies happening around Portland. I said, I'm not driving across town when you got all these white supremacists in our city. And you expect me to, as a woman of color, a Black woman, to be visibly seen during daylight. You know, I'm just not going to put myself in danger like that. And there's other Black women, who are on this body who you're also going to put in harm's way. And so it, without getting into the details, that kind of set the tone for me coming into the body, that I was already raising objections before even having my first meeting. And so at the point that I met Candace, Candace has a very strong leadership style. And at first I didn't even understand what I was seeing. It was like, hey, can I help out? How can I get in? And she was like, I got this, you know? And so I think it's really important to really speak to this, because unfortunately as Black women, unbeknownst to me, Candace had already been through so much SH. In her role as the chair, and had to really carve out the structure of the organization and the leadership and really demand respect. And so I think when I came in, it was just like, sis, I'm in my lane, get in line. And we didn't know each other, unfortunately, you know? And so, of course, you know, it was kind of like, okay, what's going on here? And as I kind of sat back and started observing, I noticed Vadim would troll her as vice chair. And so I reached out to Candace and I said, hey, listen, I know we don't know each other. Maybe we've heard each other in community. I'm here to support you. You know, I really value what you're saying and what you're doing. And so I want to make sure that you understand that I am here to back you up. We will not agree on everything. And that's not what's significant. What's significant is that you are the chair and it's important that you feel respected and heard and seen in the capacity of that role. And so whatever I can do to support you, I just want to make sure you understand that's how I'm stepping into this space. And by the way, what's up with your vice chair? What is happening here? I'm noticing some things. I see him trolling you in these meetings. It's very subtle. So for people who don't understand how microaggressions work, for us in meetings, you know, the subtleties feel like shots fired, you know, and so, but our reactions have to be so subdued because then we are, of course, labeled as angry and, you know, all the things. And so, you know, I told Candace, I will happily step in and take some of that heat off of you, you know, to the extent that you feel comfortable allowing me to do it. And so she was like, well, I can kind of handle it in these areas, but if you see something and you want to speak up, you know, don't hold back. And so then I started noticing Vadim trolling me in these meetings, you know, and when I say trolling, it's important for people to understand the Citizens Review Committee is an adjudicating body. So when citizens have complaints against the Portland Police Bureau, they file a complaint through the Independent Police Review. The IPR initiates an investigation. It goes through the police bureau. There's a process for that. And then if the citizen feels like it was not handled in their favor, the ruling was not favorable to them, there's an appeal process. And upon appeal, it comes to the CRC. And we read all the case. So we're kind of like a panel of judges. We're like a jury, if you will. And Candace is at the head of it as the chair. And then, of course, the vice chair role. And so a lot of the people who sit on this body and who have sat on this body have been licensed attorneys and conservative and white. And so for Candace and I to be on this body, we did not represent the first Black women because there has been a previous Black woman chair. There have been previous Black women, but typically I am a lawyer. I went to law school. You know, Candace works in policy and in government. So to have two Black women who aren't just here to be tokenized, but who are here and understand the process and are really digging in at the height of the Black Lives Matter movement in 2020 and George Floyd's murder, it was very significant. And so unfortunately, there was no media coverage really to capture the things that we were doing or the things we were talking about. You know, but we were hearing cases, you know, we were asking, we would have Chief Lavelle come on, we would press him for information, we would bring officers who were investigating and the IPR people. We would ask very difficult questions about the process. And a lot of times the questions involve, okay, you have a person of color or a woman asserting some kind of discrimination. Because some of the cases, we actually had a case where it was a police officer who had filed a complaint against the police department. But a lot of times there were instances of discrimination. And so when you're looking at it through a particular lens and you look at the case, it's kind of like, oh, the police did what they were supposed to do. When you apply the lens of race, when you apply the lens of gender, when you apply the lens of white supremacy, you start asking different questions. And so that is, I would say, a lot of the pressure that I applied in my role, Candace applied, and then we had some other women on the body who applied. And so unfortunately, every time we would ask these questions, Vadim, it was almost like if our question was here, he took the absolute furthest extreme to support the police side. And so this kind of became the back and forth that was occurring. It hit, you know, kind of a fever pitch when I ran against him as vice chair and was voted in his place. He was still the chair of our subcommittee, which was the policy and outreach committee. And unbeknownst to Candace or I, Vadim decided to run for office while he was on the CRC. And now Candace ran for office while she was on the CRC. And, you know, she's been very tight-lipped. And I really have to give her a lot of credit to her composure through this process, because she was... I don't want to curse. She was not treated well. She was challenged. She was threatened with removal by the auditor. She's shown me the emails. I've seen it. So I can say I have firsthand knowledge of the level of aggression that was taken against her in her capacity as a CRC officer to remove her when she ran for office. There was questions about how she disclosed this information. Candace and I even met with the former chair who was chair at the time that she ran on the CRC, who confirmed Candace checked in with me. We followed protocols. We made sure that she was transparent about all of her activities. I read all the emails. I talked to the people. I can verify that these boxes were checked at the time. When Vadim ran for office, he did not notify Candace as the chair. He did not notify me as co-chair. We found out in the media, along with everybody else. And so when this happened, you know, we as the chair and vice chair sit in a lot of high level meetings with the chief and the mayor and other city council staff and various folks to talk about things. And so we talked with the IPR staff, and apparently Vadim had talked to them. You know, and unfortunately, that's not how the CRC works. The IPR reports to the CRC. The CRC does not report to the IPR. And so he did not follow protocol. So that was a red flag for us. And so I said to Candace in this meeting, you know, Vadim has had issues with you. And I think you as the chair trying to go after him or talk to him, even it will give the impression like you were trying to go after him. I will be the one to talk to him. I'm not running for office. I, you know, I'm not government. I'm not affiliated. Race Talks is nonpartisan. I will reach out to him. I was also the vice chair of the policy and outreach committee at the time. And I also felt like there was going to be a conflict of interest of him running for city council and chairing a policy committee you know, where we make recommendations to city council regarding law enforcement in our city. So I reached out to Vadim. Would you consider taking a leave of absence or stepping down or recusing yourself from some of these things? And he said, absolutely not. I don't see a problem. And I said, I think there's a very big problem. And I laid it out and I said, I'm very disappointed to hear, you know, that you feel that this way. You know, I need you to understand I have some very serious concerns, and I'm talking to you as the vice chair of the CRC, as well as your vice chair of the subcommittee, and that a conversation has already been had with IPR and Candace about this. So unfortunately, the bylaws didn't prevent us from, you know, taking further action beyond the conversation. And then things escalated. You know, he wanted to take charge on body cameras and a public comment session and make recommendations around body cameras for the police department. The irony here is that we as a CRC committee, we actually didn't have an issue with what he was recommending. We just didn't want him to be the one recommending it. We wanted a consensus from the body, because through a previous subcommittee, there was a report that was released about the protesting and surveys, and that made national news, and it was under a lot of scrutiny. And so Candace, under her leadership, said, hey, listen, we've already been through a process where we've made recommendations to the police and to city council, and we caught a lot of fire, you know, from it. So it's really important that, you know, we've learned some things from this process, a lot of time and energy from our subcommittee, and our community members on the subcommittee, was time and energy was put in. And so all we're asking is that, you know, we are crossing our T's and dotting our I's on this process. Can you please confirm where you all are at? Vadim, you're the chair. This is Candace writing in an email. Can you give me an update on where you are? And his response in the email was just to lambaster, you know, and this is all public record at this point. You know, it was like 10:30 at night. It was like, Candace, you know, why are you coming at me like this? It's because I'm running for office. And but it's like, bruh, I'm asking for a status update is what I'm asking. And so I jumped in and said, Vadim, you know, one, that wasn't what she asked, but two, let's address the elephant in the room. I've already approached you about concerns about, you know, the conflict of interest of what you were trying to do here. I lead monthly forums for race talks, and there is a tremendous amount of work and planning that goes in just leading a monthly community forum. You talking about doing it for an entire city, you know, where we're supposed to advertise public comment, and you haven't done that. So he completely ignored us. We had about four or five other CRC members jump in. It wasn't until the white CRC members jumped in to express concerns about his behavior that he backed off. And so it was at that moment that I said, you know, Candace, I'm ready to call for his resignation, because this has gone too far. And so I ended up reaching out to him and said, hey, listen, the steps and the actions and the lack of professionalism and the character you demonstrated to Candace and I as the chair and co-chair went beyond the scope of what should have happened. And I'm going to ask for you to step down. And so this is up to that point, this was everything that was happening behind the scenes. And this is absolutely everything that I shared with James Posey when he contacted me last month saying, hey, Shayna, I'd like you to get involved with NAACP. And by the way, we're thinking about having Vadim on as a committee chair. And I said, I strongly object. You know, he did not respond well to Black women in positions of authority on the CRC body, which is an adjudicating body. You know, I won't go too deeply into how Mr. Posey responded, but let's just say he chose to ignore my objections and concerns. And I was very shocked that he did that. And so I think that goes back to something else that I've said before, and I think it ruffled his feathers when I was on Bruce Broussard's show on the Oregon Voter Digest, which is we have an issue of Black men not supporting Black women in community. And James Posey, along with I think about four or five other brothers in community who hold positions of leadership, were very active in their not just not supporting Joanne, but putting themselves physically and putting their face on Vadim's campaign to say, I support this man over here. I'm a third generation Black Portlander. My family has been involved with NAACP going back 80 years in the city. So I've seen Vadim in the Black community but once. So like I told Mr. Posey, whether I have a membership to the NAACP or not, I'm Black living in Portland. So that's my vote. I live in community. I serve community. I don't know if Vadim can say the same about living in community, being part of the Black community. So I'll shut up and turn it over to Candace or Mac.
Yeah, so I think it's just great context, a lot of stuff, again, behind the scenes there. But I just want to, I think you hit on really important kind of like underlying point, again, speaking to people, not just with your all your involvement with the NAACP, but again, with your respective organizations, where it's because there's so many nonprofits in Portland, it's already an uphill battle trying to get people involved with the work and trying to, you know, overcome, in a lot of cases, very, you know, understandable skepticism. So when people are looking at, you know, again, from the outside looking in, I'll say this on here, just as, you know, for all transparency as an imagined Black member, part of me was like, you know, doing the whole like Suge Knight thing where it's like, well, if you don't want Ted Wheeler at your press conference, you know, come over here. But also I do respect the work you all are doing at the NAACP, especially what people were doing in that previous administration. And I think it's important when we're all kind of, you know, in some form of like coalition. So I guess the last thing I would just ask to all of you is like, what would you say to people who, again, on the outside looking in are saying, well, see, this confirms everything, and this is why I don't get involved with nonprofits. This is why I don't get involved with organizations, because it's all a mess or whatever.
If I can, I think the thing I would say is that these nonprofits and organizations that we have are only as good as we make them or allow them to be, right? So it shouldn't be confused. There are still a lot of very good people in leadership at the NAACP. You don't always get to control who your president is. And that being said, you know, Vadim did not get elected by the body. In fact, he failed miserably. He got two votes, including his sponsor, in a body that was about 10 people. So that was not, you know, that's actually like a crushing defeat. But the only reason that I think that happened is because people on the inside, you know, did raise the flag. They did contact people and we did get involved. We did raise some scuttlebutt, and that resulted in attention coming in. That's, you know, it was enough attention that people didn't feel comfortable voting for him. You know, a lot of these nonprofits, these boards, it's not hard to pass things. It's not hard to say, hey, I want this to happen. And you bring it to a board and they say, there's nothing wrong with it. It looks good, until they have information saying it's not good. So if you don't show up and say, hey, this is not going to work, if you do not protest, then you're not going to get any results that you actually want. So I think it's important that people do understand that it's not a matter of, oh, the NAACP is garbage or anything of that sort. It's just that it's in a leadership crisis. And so it needs people to hold those leaders sometimes in check until you can change.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that, because totally agree, it's absolutely what you make of it. I think it's important for people to understand that the pipeline into positions of real power and authority streams through all these little boards that you don't pay a lot of attention to, that you don't know are there. You know, the reason that people like Vadim have been able to amass so much of a public profile and get to the point of running for office and having a legitimate chance at winning is because he has situated himself in all these different boards, and they add legitimacy and credibility. Even if you sit on those boards and do the exact opposite of what they're there for, even if you sit on them and do nothing, just having that on your resume makes a big difference in the court of public opinion. And so I think it's important for people to recognize that, of course, our systems are flawed, not everything is perfect, but avoiding it is not the answer. Avoiding it and saying that they're useless is not the answer, because that's just not true. They all have different usefulness, and they add up to this larger like concept of how people attain power in a city. And so, you know, I sit on a bunch of these boards too. You know, Vadim and I are actually very similar in that we, you know, go out and be on all these boards. I would say the difference is that I do things on them. I actually, you know, try to make them better. That's just me throwing some shade, but that's just the truth, you know? And I was actually talking to someone yesterday. They were like, it's so hard. Like, there's people that join these boards and they like don't want to do anything. Or you've got like a board of 20 people and there's like five people that do anything. And like, how do we stop that? And I'm like, honestly, I don't know that there's an answer to how do you stop it, because there's always going to be people who only want things for certain reasons, like clout and political, you know, opportunities. And there are people who go into these spaces and actually want to make change. That's always going to be the case. That's from your local board all the way up to Congress. That's happening, right? So I think it's less about, you know, saying, oh, well, we can't stop it. For me, it's more that I look at that and I say, I'm not going to let those people stop me from accomplishing what I'm doing. You know what I mean? So I think it's just critical that people understand that every little bit of action counts. Like even just 48 hours of us kind of organizing and talking through this, we were able to accomplish something that could have had massive implications for our community if it went through. And so people, you know, find your way. Your way doesn't have to be how everyone does it. You know, some people choose to run for office. Some people choose to be on these little boards. Some people choose to organize on Twitter. Like everyone has a way, but saying that nothing works is incorrect. And I challenge folks to just find their own way, because it does make a difference.
I really appreciate you saying that, Candace, because I think one of the things I struggle with in terms of these bodies is that, you know, how do you alert people in community to what's going on? I mean, I think that's been some of the challenge, you know. So a perfect example is when folks were coming for your neck when you were on the CRC, you know, how do you put the auditor on blast? You know, how do you? And so I'm a Gen X, and so I'm not on Twitter. I'm still barely learning Instagram. You know, I'm of the generation where you don't really put your business out in the streets like that. And so I admire the three of you, because y'all was just out there. I was like, oh, is this how it goes? Okay. okay. Noted. You know, so I'm taking notes, because the reality is Vadim is not the first person who has shown up like this. It's just escalated to a level of concern, you know, because the people who we have talked to have been opening doors for him into our community. That's one of the biggest concerns. But he's not the first person to be offensive or to, you know, raise questions and alarms. One of the things I will point out also is that, you know, you mentioned Matt Hennessy earlier, Bruce. Matt Hennessy was part of the Beloved Community Elders who we convened a mediation with Candace, Vadim, and myself to talk through the issue. And one of the issues of mistrust that I really have around Vadim is that, you know, Candace, along with some other folks in community, were receiving death threats. This is serious. You know, yes, you too, Max. So, I mean, there was a literal list that was being generated, you know, from the beginning of 2020. And so Candace literally said nothing. You know, I was like, Candace, you got enough heat on you. I'll be the one to do it. They were calling her anti-Semitic. I'm Black and Jewish. Like, I'm like, do y'all need me to pull out my bat mitzvah photos and show you? So I've known Vadim for 4 years prior to being on the CRC in the Beloved Community, which is religious leaders. He never mentioned being Jewish once. Not once. Everybody knows I'm Jewish in that space. It's Muslims, Christians, you name it. So that to me feels, as my mom said in the NAACP meeting, it feels duplicitous, you know? And so we have to have a way to call folks out when these meetings happen. And so I don't know if y'all have some suggestions about that, you know, because I feel like that's what I end up running up against more often. And it's like, what borderlines on raising too many alarms when maybe it's just an inappropriate comment, but when it's happening with such a frequency, because he didn't just do it in CRC. It happened in a number of committees, and a lot of people came forward when he went to the press rather than come talk to me and Candace or come to our CRC meeting. So, I mean, I don't really know what the right thing to do is. And so maybe y'all got some suggestions, because I can't imagine we are the only ones out here dealing with messy people in these committees.
We're not.
No.
Yeah. Some people are only there, I think, to cause disruption and cause problems. I mean, when you look at Vadim's track record, he loses every election, but he always shows up and creates enough chaos to let something else happen. If you look at how he did all the dirty work for Renee, that his PAC actually ended up eventually, you know, endorsing, the PAC that he helped create ended up endorsing the person that beat him. But that's all just a matter of, you know, like political trickery, right? He doesn't have to win anything. He can just go in like a bowling ball and cause chaos and bring distrust to a situation. So, you know, I feel like with the NAACP, a lot of this is kind of like a two-headed attack, right? Like on one hand, sure, maybe we could put people in there that'll actually do our bidding and allow someone like a Vadim to become the political chair for the NAACP appointment, which is absolutely just ridiculous. But even if not, how much is the NAACP damaged in its own community just by fighting against that, right? So it's kind of a two-pronged attack. And I feel like as Black people, we often fall for this tactic of, I'm going to, you know, whoever is on the outside and not us is going to say, this is a way that, you know, I can destroy you. And some of us will see it and some of us won't. And then those of us that see it and those of us don't are actually going to fight each other over this. So it's like either way they get the win. It's like a virus. So we really have to be careful on how we come after each other and how we talk about each other and to each other and looking at our audiences. Like I have to know, I have an audience that's not just Black people. So I have to oftentimes be careful and be a very sure about things before I put them on my platform, right? Because this could create a huge issue where it may not actually be there. So this, I felt like actually rose to the level of occasion where we needed to say something publicly and immediately and bring in that in those eyes to kind of hold us accountable to ourselves. So it's a very difficult, you know, that's probably a whole conversation of how that dynamic works, but something that we definitely have to constantly work at and be cognizant of.
I remember just even when all this went down, you know, I was shocked that I can't speak for Candace, but, you know, no one reached out to say, hey, what's going on over there? You know, what is this body? Y'all calling out this person running for city council? What, you know, I mean, that to me seems significant, you know, but I guess there's an impression that maybe we're thin skin and, you know, I'm like, I'm not, if you know me, I like to have direct conversations. If there's a problem, I want to, you know, problem solve it. I'm looking for the win-win. And so I really hope that if anything, people really understand that we really tried to have conversation with Vadim. We attempted to, problem solve and find solutions. And so unfortunately, when it gets to the level of hitting the news cycle, oftentimes our stories aren't told. You know, Ken Boddy did not reach out to me and Candace when he gave Vadim, you know, front and center. You know, none of the reporters who came to Vadim's news conference reported accurately. I mean, in fact, they said there was anti-Semitism. I was like, excuse me, I'm Jewish. So you got two Jews talking to each other. One just happens to be Black. It was completely ignored at the time that Ukraine was engaged in war, but they were refusing to let Africans leave the country. So the issue of anti-Blackness within the country, you know, because it was kind of like, well, Vadim's from Ukraine, so therefore he's a victim and an immigrant. But literally, we got Black people in Ukraine in the midst of a beginning war, being ignored and harmed because of racism. So it's but nobody wants to talk about
really
that.
A bastion of a what do you call it? Diversity.
The other thing that's important in all of this, as far as the lesson learned, is so after this whole NAACP thing, I had some people reach out to me and say like that they did see what was going on, but they didn't get involved. They didn't know how to, but they were glad that somebody did. And I'm like, I appreciate that. But it's important that like, we just need to activate people. Like you got to get involved because yeah. I think if it weren't for Shayna coming into the CRC, I mean, I have been enduring a lot on the yes. CRC and I don't have a choice. I don't have a choice but to endure it because if I speak up for myself, then I'm a race baiter or I'm this or I'm that. And, you know, it harms me. It harms me way more to as a victim of the like microaggressions, as the, you know, someone receiving the harm, it harms me even more to speak up. So I don't in a lot of ways and in a lot of spaces. That's just the truth. That's just what I've had to navigate as a Black Tina woman my whole life. And so I think it's important that people recognize, because when all that was going on, I had other members of the CRC, like, how can we support you? I'm like, you can support me by just saying something, anything, mm-hmm. anything, you know, like stop being afraid to speak up when you know something is obviously wrong, because you clearly knew it was wrong, right. You know, you knew something was wrong. And just because I'm poised and because I'm measured in my response doesn't mean I don't need help. So I think just it's important as far as like how to support Black women. Like we always talk how to support Black women. That's how you support us, by knowing that even if our response doesn't look like what it should look like, if you were the, you know, being attacked by someone, that doesn't mean that I'm not hurting. And that doesn't mean I don't need support, because I have to choose how I respond to protect myself. And often that means enduring, and often that means shying away. I'm not saying that I'm always shying away. That's definitely not the case. But I do think like when you look at the large spectrum of things, like I can't respond to every single little thing because it's exhausting and I have to reserve my energy in at some point. So just anything, literally saying anything, like makes such a difference to know that I'm not alone, that I'm not like crazy. Cause sometimes I'm like, did y'all see that? Is it just me? Or like, is something weird here, you know? And because people don't say anything, I'm just like, well, you know, I what am I going to do? So I think that's just, it's key for people to understand, like, doing nothing is not an option. If you say you really support, like, people of color in the city, doing nothing is not an option. I think it's also just culturally, like, I'm an East Coaster. And, like, people on the East Coast, like, they say stuff. Like, when they have feelings, they say it, you know? And out here, everyone is so, like, meek. And I'm like, y'all, like, get a spine, you know? Like, I know you have feelings, but you don't do anything about those feelings. So I think also I stick out here in being someone that's used to being around people who are much more forward in expressing themselves. So Portland.
I call it Portland polite.
Portland polite, it is. Like,
I mean, I will say this too, you know, prior to coming on the CRC, you know, I was a whistleblower in the legislature. I was named, Teresa Rayford and I were named as subjects in the investigation against that legislator that I worked for and whistleblew on. And, you know, even when I reached out to community at the time, you know, I was so new here, I really didn't know how to ask for help. And so, and especially when it's a man of color in community, you know, he wasn't Black, but, you know, and so it's like, okay, how do we navigate this? Where do we get support? And I think the problem is a lot of people are afraid, you know? And so the irony of finding out that Teresa and I were both named as subjects, you know, she was in race. You, Candace, you and Teresa were on our Race Talks panel in January of 2021. And literally a week later, I'm hearing Teresa's voice on a legislative panel like, wait a minute, what you mean you subject number? Wait, what? And the irony here is that we had two non-sexual harassment complaints against this person, and ours were both dismissed. And to my knowledge, we were the only Black women who had complaints, and they were dismissed. And I remember asking Teresa, like, hey, has anybody reached out to you? Like, does anybody know? I know some people know it was me, and nobody, like, people have literally, like, oh, my hands are tied, I can't do anything. I mean, I got a lawsuit against Boley. I was a civil rights investigator. Carol Johnson, who was the director, got ran up out of there as the director. AARP director was ran up out. You know, we have a history of running Black women up out of these positions of leadership, but then we don't step in to support them. And so for me, seeing what was happening with Candace, I didn't know her very well, but it was really important just based on my own experience of feeling so isolated and unsupported. It was really important that she understood, hey, listen, I will say the things that you can't say. I will take that heat, and I will pull some other folks in to support us. You just let me know kind of how we need to do this. And I think that really made all the difference. And so I guess if folks listening to this take anything away, I hope it's that, you know, if you see somebody struggling, don't assume they've got it figured out. Assume they're scared, their income is being impacted, they might be being threatened, and you know, reach out, tap in, you know, and see how you can help and support them.
I want to give a shout out to Mac and some other folks who throughout all of this really did step up to support us. And so, I want to just make it clear, like, there are people out here supporting each other. It's not like it is absent. I know that's not what we're saying, but I just really want to lift that up because I've been really grateful for so many of the folks that have put themselves on the front line to help endure all these attacks. So shout out to Mac.
Shout out to you guys. Thanks for, you know, bringing things and trusting each other, you know, with issues and problems. And I think that's a big thing, is being able to trust one another when things occur and being able to say, this isn't right. This is, you know, even if it is not a friendly thing or a thing that makes us all happy to have to talk about or bring up at all, I think it's important that we can trust each other to say, hey, how can we best handle this? How, you know, can we measure our response so we're not, like, you know, overdoing it or creating more harm through, you know, our notifications to the public or whatever. So I just appreciate you guys, you know, always being good at sounding boards as well and allowing me to also, you know, be one for you.
Well, that's a wonderful, hopeful note to end this on. So we're gonna wrap there. But yeah, Candace, Shayna, Mac, thank you again for taking the time this morning to kind of just, again, catch people up to speed on kind of what's been happening, you know, behind the scenes with the NAACP, but also, you know, not just, you know, giving people like an actual message, some directives, not just, you know, feeding into the cynicism. Drama.
I know they're still looking for a political chair and specifically looking for a Black woman. So if there's any Black women who have an interest of getting involved. And I think, you know, as I mentioned, I found out my membership lapsed. So I think this is definitely a time to, you mentioned Imagine Black Bruce. I think so, getting involved in all the organizations, you know, and including NAACP and community, so that we can kind of keep a pulse on what's happening. So if we see something going on in Imagine Black and Joy Lise and her team are like, hey, we're talking XYZ, and we don't see that because there is a generational divide and we aren't monolithic. And so it's an opportunity, you know, to invite and do a call in on the NAACP, especially with the members who feel like maybe they want to do something different, but, you know, don't have that community push. So I would definitely say that would be the other thing, like, get involved. I'm saying that as much to myself as I'm throwing it out there, you know, get involved, Shayna, you know,
Awesome. Awesome. Oh, yeah. Again, to the people, get involved. You three, thank you again for the time this morning. And yeah.
Happy Black History Month.
Yeah.
Hey.
This has been the Bruce Poinsett Show. Again, you can catch us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM 96.7, or you can catch clips on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett. If you want access to exclusive bonus coverage, you can go to patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett. And make sure to follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM. That's numbers with a Z. Or on the Numbers Podcast Network on all podcasting platforms, or thenumberspodcast.com. Again, that's numbers with a C.